One of my favorite quotes is from Nietzsche. He said, if you understand the why, you can always bear the how. So know your why. Why is it that you are moving? Why is it that you are desiring the things you're desiring? If you really fully understand that and you stand behind that, you can bear any how. All right, tonight we're going to talk about a topic that I love talking and writing about. It's a topic that can resonate with everybody because if you are living and you are breathing, you experience this emotion. Can you guess what it is? What? Well, my sweet Aquarian sister said love. No, it's actually fear. So what is the only thing that stops you from getting what you really want? That is fear. False evidence appearing real. Fear holds us back, it keeps us stuck, it makes us feel paralyzed, it stops us from pursuing our dreams, it makes us play it small. So tonight we're going to talk about fear, but also, even though fear is a negative emotion, when it is channeled properly, it can be used for a catalyst for growth. So I know you love my stories.
I love your stories.
This one's not about Allison.
Did anybody notice that Monica's much taller than me? That doesn't look like Monica's much taller than me. This isn't in real life. In real life, Monica's not this much taller than me.
It's all about posture.
I think your chair's a little bit higher than mine.
My chair is exactly the same height, by the way. Yeah.
Okay. It's very funny.
The stories we tell ourselves. But I'm going to tell you a story. Not about my chair, not about Allison. But it's actually a really great book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Who's read that book? Oh my God, guys, it's an amazing, amazing, inspiring, raw, sad, painful, but beautiful book. I highly recommend it. And this is something, it's a story that's been written about many different times in different ways, but this is how he wrote it in his book. A rich man and a mighty merchant once walked in the garden with one of his servants. The servant cried that he had just encountered death, who had threatened him. He begged his master to give him the fastest horse so that he could make haste and flee to Samarra, which he could reach that same evening. The master consented, and the servant galloped off on the horse. On returning to his house, the master himself met Death and questioned him, "Why did you terrify and threaten my servant?" Death replied, "I did not threaten him. I only showed surprise in still finding him here when I planned to meet him tonight in Samarra." Recently, on our podcast, we interviewed Michael Capone, and he has a nonprofit organization called Global Empowerment Mission, and he goes to, he's the first person to hit any kind of disaster, natural disaster, war. He's right there helping, aiding, and he said when you fear, you only put yourself in more danger. And it's echoing what Viktor Frankl said in that fear tends to make happen precisely that which one fears. And what I love about the quote of this servant is that often we fear things, we try to escape the things we fear, and the only thing we do is bring that fear about more quickly because we're running from it instead of seeing it face on. I have more to say, but I want to give you a chance to speak.
No, it's interesting. One of the things, as you know, I prepare my lectures in advance for Rosh Hashanah. And one of the points, which I really didn't get to speak about, but it's something we did speak about between you and I, is the idea of fear as it relates to Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year. It says, and if you read in many of the writings, that it's called the Day of Judgment. And fear, that word, is often associated with this day. And the interesting reality is that, you know, some things we think that fear is something we learn, but it's not. It is literally inborn. I mean, children have fears, sometimes more than adults, sometimes less. Why is it even as an adult, right, if you come into a new place and it's night and all the lights are out, right? Suddenly you have these thoughts, right? Maybe there's somebody else in the room. Right? All these silly thoughts that become awakened.
That's not, I'm worried I'm going to bump into something. You're afraid of people in the room?
I'm not, but I think people are. Or that there's some monster or a ghost. So, don't raise your hand, but I'm assuming there's a few people in
raise
the room.
Raise your hand, yeah.
Have you ever feared somebody else in the room in the middle of the night when it's dark. Yeah, I see somebody raise their hand. A few people raise their hand right there. Thank you. Thank you. So this is, by the way, a proven fact.
Yes, it's true.
Why is that? Why is that that fear comes so naturally to us? Why are we born with a capacity for fear and often irrational fears, exaggerated fears? And the reason is because fear is actually a very necessary, a very important element within our development. Of course, it's the basic fear, right? You don't want to fear fire. You want to fear anything that can cause harm. But on a deeper level, it is because our soul enters in this world terrified. A baby cries when it is first born because it realizes it has just separated itself from complete truth and light into a world of lies and potential darkness. So the real source of fear is our soul's fear. And really, to be honest, our soul is afraid because of the way we often live our lives. So when we behave in ways that we know are disconnecting us from the light of the Creator, that simply builds a reservoir of fear. Yes, it might manifest as a fear of flight or fear of an elevator or fear of darkness. But the real spiritual source of all of our fears is our soul's true and continuous fear, except for those of us who are living our lives consistently in a way that connects us to the light of the Creator, and we refrain from those actions that disconnect us from the light of the Creator. When enough of those fears, when enough of those true soul fears become awakened, it then manifests as some irrational physical fear. But the source is true. And the need for fear is maybe the most important need that we have. Except, again, that we take it to the wrong places and we understand it as a consequence or as an effect of what it is not. And therefore, to go back to the original question, why is fear so important? Why is it prevalent and also important? Is because, as the Kabbalists teach, the Zohar says this, Rav Asher explains this, we are meant to live in fear, but only one fear. Fear of disconnecting from the light of the Creator that should be greater than any other fear. So when somebody gets you angry and you want to yell at them, your anger is diminished by your fear. Because you know if you yell, you disconnect from the light of the Creator, and that's the true fear that you have. And if you live your life with this singular fear, first of all, of course, you'll live the most elevated life. But more importantly, you will have no fear. Because as we said, fear is only an effect of our soul's fear left unheeded. So we need fear. But we need the right fear. We only need one fear. And if you have that one fear, all other fears will go away. You don't heed that fear, you will see, chas v'shalom, more and more fears develop.
It's interesting, as you were speaking, I was thinking about if you were driving in like a beat up car and the wheels are wobbly and their transmission is almost running out and it just seems like it's going to break down. That is how we operate if we're living a life of fear and we're not connected to the Creator, versus if you are fully plugged in, right? And we have fear, but we have certainty in place of the fear, then you're in a car and you feel secure and you feel like you're going to get where you need to go. It's a completely different way of living. And with Viktor Frankl, part of his book, he was in the Holocaust, and he writes about the things that he experienced in a physical way, but also the profound spiritual understandings he came to know through that experience. I really was so moved by his story and his experience as he saw it. But he was given so many moments to escape the camps and to be transferred, but you don't know if you're going to be transferred or transported. You don't know if you're going to end up in a gas chamber or you're going to be in a better camp. Or he tried to escape with friends that told him to go. And every single time he was given an opportunity, He didn't respond to fear. If I stay here, that's the end. Instead, he kept saying, I'm going to leave it up to fate. So he said no to the escape. He said no to the transfer. Even when guards said, you know, I think you should take your name off this list. He said, no, I'm going to go forward with it. And every single time, he was saved. You know, one camp that he was in, and he wasn't sure if he should allow fate to take its place. And by fate, it's trusting the creator. Cannibalism broke out like the next day or the next week, he found out from people. So over and over again, when he placed himself in certainty rather than in fear, he was always saved, even in the most horrendous condition. And I think that that's the purpose of fear. The purpose of fear is to help us build our certainty and our trust in the Creator. Because when you feel scared, you feel desperate. When you feel worried or doubtful or fearful, you're open to new ideas and new possibilities. Fear actually is the catalyst for connection if you try to work through the fear. Unfortunately, we gather fear through life. I'm afraid of this and I'm afraid of that. And then we become a fear-based person. I'm never going to travel because I don't like to fly. I'm never going to go and public speak because it feels like a slow death. I'm not going to do all these things that I'm desiring to do because that will be the end of me, versus that fear is the thing that's making you so uncomfortable to be awakened, to change, to connect to the Creator. And so when we talk about certainty, certainty is a buzzword. You know, I'm really sure about this. I feel really certain. But what does certainty mean? So before we talk about what certainty is, I want to say what it is not. Certainty is not something we use to get what we want. I know, I'm going to manifest it. Power of knowing, I believe it, it's going to happen. That is not certainty. Certainty is not a guarantee that everything will unfold exactly as you want it. Not certainty. Certainty is not pretending that we don't have fear. Rather, it's choosing to move forward even though you feel fear. Certainty is not the same thing as belief, because you can believe in something, but also you cannot believe in it at the same time. Belief is never enough. And the Rav would always talk about that, right? Hope and belief. It's really about knowing. It's about knowing that no matter what happens, it's for you. The Creator is with you, and it's for your greatest good. And certainty is definitely not something we use only when we're desperate in a time of need. So if we just think about where we are in our lives in terms of fear, how can you move forward with that? Take that fear and put all that energy into trusting that everything that is in front of you, everything that you feel doubtful of, is there to wake you up and say, okay, yes, you should go this way if you really desire it. It's an indication of what needs to be next.
Yeah, it's interesting. A few days ago, I was talking to a student, and we were talking about fear. And the Kabbalists speak about this, so it's not strange to talk about that, that often to assess truth, or at least what is important, it's important to think about what your thoughts would be if you were about to leave this physical world. And if you ask yourself the question, if you're in any way spiritually awakened, what fear would you have? Not what pain you would have. Yes, of course, you would have pain probably of missing or not being with your loved ones. A lot of pain. But fear, the only true fear that a person would have is the question, did his soul accomplish his purpose in this world? And did he or she connect enough to the light of the Creator so that their soul's journey onward will be a peaceful one, will be a smooth one.
I just want to say one thing. It's interesting that you're bringing that up. I was speaking to somebody today, and her brother is dying. And she saw him in the hospital, and he's moaning for hours in pain and agony, but he won't accept any medication. Do you know why? In agony, right? And finally she went, she's like, I can't hear this anymore, he's in pain. And the nurse said, if somebody doesn't admit that they're dying, that they can't accept it, and they don't want the medication because of that, we can't do anything about it. So this person was so afraid to die because he realized he didn't live the life. And he's not even a spiritual person, right? But I think we've talked about this, when it comes to death, everybody gets to that place right before they leave this world where they see everything, right? All the lies, like we talked about earlier today, all the lies that they've been telling themselves their whole lives. Now they see reality, they see truth, and then there's not time. right? And that's, we talk about the illusion of time, but in that moment, time is everything, right? In that moment, time actually matters because now we're leaving the physical plane. And so time is something that's important, right? Whereas normally it's not so important. We take it too seriously. We have enough of it. We don't have enough of it. We don't respect it. But I thought it was so interesting that the doctors, the nurses see that if a person, they can't accept that death is coming, they actually deny medication. They deny that it's actually happening.
Exactly. And that's, I think for all, I think it's a very important, relatively important thought to have often, which is, again, what will be the thing, and I believe it's just one, right, that a person would fear at the end. And that would be, did I push myself to connect as much as I can? And we've shared this before, but it's worth sharing again, both with the Rav and with my mother. You can see, you see people who did not have that fear at the end, because as they plainly said often, and certainly in the last few months, you know, I feel that I've done everything that my soul came to this world to do, and I've connected to the Creator in the way that I am supposed to.
I actually said to her, the way a person dies is an indication of how they lived.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. But you were saying?
No. As far as fear, I think that that awareness that as we reside here now, we should be afraid that we're not connecting enough, that we're not developing enough, so that when that moment comes, that fear no longer exists.
So I think it's important at this point for all of us in the room to think about what it is you fear the most and how your relationship with fear has been. I think for most of us, and I certainly did this for the beginning of my life, the first 20 years of my life, I ran from fear. I felt scared and I tried to get distracted, or I was afraid of something and I tried to reason with myself, or I found a way to distract myself. But fear was always there until it became overwhelming for me when my second son was born, and it just made me stop life as I knew it. I was overwhelmed with fear. But the first time I ever really, really experienced undescribable, paralyzing fear was when my uncle became sick. I was 8 years old, and he was 25, and we had just moved from New Orleans to California, and I hadn't seen him for a long time. And one day he walked in the room and he was scary. He was unrecognizable. And I could tell by everybody in the room, my grandparents, my parents, my aunts and uncles, that, you know, the laughter was kind of forced. He was standing at the doorway and he was yelling at my grandparents, cursing them. And then he pulled his pants down. And I was 8 years old and I was scared, very, very scared. And I remember wanting to run out of the room, but I was afraid if I got up, I would draw attention to myself and then he'd pick on me. So I sat there. Eventually, my mom put her hands over my eyes and I could pretend that I wasn't there for a moment, but the fear only grew because I thought that it was contagious, because we never talked about what he had, which was schizophrenia. And even if we had talked about it, I would be afraid of things like hereditary, predisposed genetic disposition. It wouldn't have made me feel any better if I knew what was going on. And from that point on, a fear was now implanted in me. So I had a fear of anybody who looked different or sounded different when I would go on long runs, or I was training for a marathon. If I ran by somebody who was homeless and they sounded like they were a bit off or not mentally there, I would hold my breath because I didn't want to catch it. Really illogical fear, right? And it speaks to the power of fear, because the truth is the fear that all of us have, every single person, is the fear of the unknown. You can put it in a different bucket. I can put it in the bucket of mental illness. You can put it in the bucket of poverty. You can put it in the bucket of being rejected. But fear is fear of the unknown, the unpredictable, the unknowable part of life. But the key here is all of life is unknowable, right? It's up to us to discover it, to create it, to make it what it's meant to be, to make it meaningful for us. And how do you do that? The only way that you do that is if you connect to the Creator. So hence, the fear, again, is there to show you. If I had let any of my fears, especially the ones that I had when I was younger, up until my young adult life, if I had let those become me, I would be hardened by life. I would be hardened by the painful things in my life, and it would be who I was. Instead, I thought, okay, this fear is so overwhelming. It feels so painful. What is it here to teach me? Fear is actually your friend. Nobody says that, but it is. If you look to your fear and you say, okay, what am I really afraid of? I'm not going to give that fear energy. Now, what can I do about it? And that's why my book's called Fear is Not an Option. When fear is no longer an option, you ask yourself, what is an option? Everything. Basically, everything's an option. When you start to see things outside of the realm of what you are so afraid of, what you are most afraid of means that there's probably something there that you need to do. Me being afraid of catching something of a mental illness would mean that I'm going to make myself small and never tell you what's in my mind or never put myself out there for fear of what if something happens to me. I don't want to be public, right? Fear stops us in every single way. And I want to share with you, there's one of our teachers, Yehuda, who I'm going to invite up here in a little bit, but it was really inspiring. His daughter was having a bat mitzvah and they wanted to come to New York, but his fear of flying didn't make it so. And then he felt badly about that. And he's like, what can I do? I said, well, did you ever read this really great book called Fear is Not an Option? He had not. That's okay. So he started reading it, and then he read it 3 times. And then he decided to use one of the tools in the book, which is exposure therapy. And he decided to get on a plane and take short flights, a half-hour flight, an hour flight, all in Florida where he lives. And he took 7 flights total, and he flew here in New York 2 days ago. We have some pictures of him on his flights, and he would text us before every flight. And it lit my day up, I have to tell you. So what Yehuda did is exactly that. He took his fear, and I said to him, would you rather play it safe your whole life and live in Florida for the rest of your life and never travel anywhere, never have new experiences, never put yourself out there because you are giving all your energy into this fear? And by the way, the fear then became another fear and another fear and another fear. So he decided to take the bull by the horns and really put his fear, all that energy, into connection and certainty in the Creator. And he really is living what we are sharing now. So let's invite Yehuda up to the stage.
Woo! If you hear us, make sure you're here.
Yehuda!
Monica, you always push me out of my comfort zone. First of all, I was here like 13 years ago, and now I'm back. So I didn't walk. The Rav and Karen were here. No, but I said, because it was my daughter's bat mitzvah, and I said, I can't imagine coming here on a flight. Monica pushed my wife. My wife pushed me. Yes. And I said, how can I do it? I felt so bad. It was in the middle of Shabbat. I was in one of the rooms, and I was just crying, God, I tried to do it for 13 years, and I couldn't. I was crying my guts out. You take over. Take it from here. I can't. And then I started taking my flights. My flight to Key West, 20 minutes. On the way back, 25 minutes. Orlando, 35 minutes. And then on the way back, 40 minutes. Atlanta, an hour and a half. And all the way back. And Blianera, I just want to acknowledge Chaim Cohen for being my doula. He was holding my hand. With Monica's suggestion, it's his amazing book, my friends. You know, the 40 million people in the United States going through anxiety disorder. And this is the only thing that worked for me. And I believe it can help 40 million people. We got to spread it out. It's incredible. By the way, it's 5 times already. I keep hearing your voice every day in my car, audiobook. I do everything you suggest. And it's an amazing journey, and I'm not there yet.
You're here, though.
I'm here, okay? Okay.
Woo!
It really is. I'm getting there, Bezat Hashem, like with your giving birth to Abigail, and I did everything you did
in labor
to give birth.
Almost everything.
Every flight is like giving birth.
Except
I don't know. I feel like I'm gonna die every flight.
I don't know about that.
the part
you did not experience.
I will never be able to give birth. Never. I don't think so. I used everything you told me about your process of giving birth from the first, second, third, fourth child. For me, it's all about the airplane, but the idea of reaching the level of surrender. Every time I take a flight, I reach a higher level of surrendering and connecting with the Creator. And that's the most beautiful feeling in the world because that's the cure. That's the cure for all fear. So I want everybody, if you have any anxiety, you got to get this book. And I would love to create a workshop and spread this book. And everybody has to learn this. This is just amazing. Thank you.
You didn't ask
love
me
you.
To say
Thank
that.
You so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yuda. So now we have time maybe for a few, two or three questions.
We do. I just want to leave you with one question for all of you. Every day, wake up and ask yourself, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? What would my life look like? What would I do? What would I spend time doing? What would I create? How would I live? And then go do that. Honestly, every day for the next 40 days, wake up and say, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And go do that. It works. And now we have a time for a few questions.
We already have our first question here.
Oh, I always love to see you. Hello, hello.
Hello, everyone. For those of you who don't know, hi, Michal, Monica. My name is Mordechai. I'm from Los Angeles. And last year, I had a test for university that I failed in February, and the fear of repeating that failure was so strong, it took me a year and 4 months of still paying tuition, still being in the school, to take that test again, and thank God eventually pass it, but the fear was so intense, I couldn't study, I couldn't focus, I couldn't bring myself to like work on it. How do I stop that from repeating? Should I fail again in the next class or with anything else?
I mean, I want to hear what you have to say too, but I think that the problem wasn't that you failed, but that you thought you were a failure. Because if you failed, you failed, you try again. But if you found that that was somehow defining moment for you, that that's who you are, that's what paralyzes us. So it's really just about a false belief system that now you are a failure, and so why try again? And I think it's an indication, like, who do you want to be, right? If you ask yourself that question, who is it really that I want to be? You're not going to, I think, allow yourself to waste that time. Because ultimately, you're going to do it, right? If you have a big enough desire, you're going to go after it anyway. But yeah, those are all the stories that fear tells us. Don't try.
Yeah, I mean, related to that, one of my favorite ideas is that you can never fail unless you give up, right? So you can fail 1,000 times. If you haven't made the choice to give up, you still have not failed. You're just on your 1,001 try. And I think it's a very important lesson in life in so many areas, right? I mean, whether it's in relationships or our spiritual work or every area of our lives, I think that's the consciousness, which is the important consciousness. If it's something worth doing or accomplishing, it's worth failing 1,000 times to get there. If it's something not worth doing, yeah, you know, like I tried skiing a few times. I failed at it, and then I don't plan on trying.
Once, really?
A few times. I cross-country ski, just to be clear, just no downhill skiing. But the point is, if it's something that's important...
That was a funny story, though, actually.
Yes. So I'm going to tell the story. We were in Switzerland 8 or 9 years ago now. Everybody else was skiing. We were with friends there, and the friend says, you know, why don't you take a ski lesson? I was very happy to be, you know, sort of walk in the snow. It's a beautiful town. So I said, okay, I'll take a ski lesson. And my ski instructor's name was Adolf, about a 75-year-old
by the way, he was
German
really
gentleman.
True to his name, he
yes.
was.
And it was probably the worst ski instructor probably in the world. Anyway, long story short, we spent many hours doing nothing in particular. And that was my last ski
But
lesson.
Wait, it's more interesting than that.
Please.
So we're all skiing, having like an amazing day. And we come down and we're all excited. And Kyle's dripping in sweat.
Enjoy the story. Go, darling.
Sorry.
Nothing to be sorry about. Nothing to be sorry about.
To our shock, for the 3 hours we had all been skiing, Mikhail had been doing the sidestep up a little slope, like from the floor to the stage, like a little. He said to him, tell Adolf, this is, you're not learning anything. This is not fun. So he wouldn't say anything. And I went over to him and I said, I don't see how this is Like, he's not going to want to ski. Like, this is not beneficial. Adolf did not want to hear anything from me. I walked away. But that was the beginning of the end of that.
Anyway, but
you did great.
Thank you. So the point being, of course, there are certain things in life that aren't so important. But anything that is important to us to do, then we should accept failure really without any limit. It doesn't matter how many times we fail at something if it's something we want to do. And I think, like Monica said, it's so important that we think or we accept that if we've failed once or twice or whatever that number is, that we are a failure, which is simply ridiculous. But it's that acceptance of perseverance is probably the most important element. And then fear won't come in, and certainly that fear of failure won't come in.
And remember, anybody who did anything great failed many, 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 many times. I mean, one of my favorite stories is the woman who invented Spanx. What's her name? Sarah Blakely. And she, when she would come home from school, her father every day would ask her, not what did you do great? He'd say, how did you fail today? And it built resilience in her. So whenever she hit, and she had many obstacles until she became successful, like she tried to work at Disneyland and she tried for a certain part and she became like a dog. Like she just like over and over and over again, she was rejected, but she saw it as a way to build her and build her desires. So use it as the fuel to make you become better and greater, not as proof as that you're not enough, but proof that just try again, because when you get there, you're going to be exceptional.
What's like a daily habit to start implementing that mindset change?
Every day. How did I fail today?
Just ask myself.
When we ask ourselves questions that are important and spot on and poignant, we actually make great change. Whatever it is that you are the most afraid of, ask yourself. So if it's failure, how did I fail today? And what did I learn from that? And what will I do next? And then that's how you make steps forward. When we fail and we're like, oh my God, I don't want anybody to see me and I'm nothing, then you basically paralyzed yourself. So every day ask yourself, how did I fail and how did I fail greatly?
Got it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Heidi from Mexico. And this question is for the sake of sharing. I have a friend who's going through a tough time. She got married a year ago, and she's moving from Querétaro, Mexico, to Dallas, Texas. She's got a beautiful new home with her new husband, and she's now like really crying, wondering if it's going to work out, because she loves living where she does now. So what would you say to her, what she needs to ask to herself, or how can she overcome that situation? I don't know if it's fear or what she's going on, but she's going through a really difficult time. She thinks she should be happy, but she's going through all these questions, doubts, not sure how to explain that.
No, I was going to say, it's a very good question, because I think, not knowing too much of the details of her life, but often people refrain from taking big steps in life because they're afraid of the unknown, right? She knows the life that she has. She doesn't know the life that she's going to have. It seems to be good, but who knows, right? And fears come in. Monica and I often had this conversation. We were living in Los Angeles, and we were talking about moving to New York. And we knew what life in Los Angeles was like. It was okay. But we also believed that there could be something more important for us to do if we moved to New York for many different reasons. And the thing we always said to ourselves is we said two things. We said, first of all, we're not making a decision forever. We're making a decision for now. And be open and curious to new things happening. You know, I think, and you find this in all areas of life, in relationship, in work, and certainly even in spiritual work, where people stay within the confines that they know simply because of the fear that, what if I step outside of that? The fears that, oh my God, what might happen? Well, if it happens, you could always step back to where you were comfortable or to where you were before. But I think really a spiritual life, actually, which at the foundation, is the desire to always be doing new things. Always be doing new things. Not every single one of those new things is going to work out. Not every single one of those things is going to be successful. But it's a different mindset. And you know, I often quote Rav Ashlag, who says that the Creator loves new things. And that's true spirituality, and it should manifest in all areas of our lives. You know, you meet people, who live in the same house they were born in, or live in the same house they got married in, and it's now 40 years later, and, you know, they're living the same life. And that might be good for some people, but I think for somebody who's truly spiritual, which means that they're always desiring to expand, you take those chances. They don't always work out. You're curious about what possibly is further out there. You know, as an aside, I don't know if anybody's seen, there's a documentary on Apollo 13, which is really, maybe people saw the movie or know the story, but it's really an amazing story. And you meet three astronauts, who were willing to literally go on what was basically a suicide mission for the possibility or for the need to discover something new, to experience something new. Of course, I'm not saying that we need to take those type of extreme chances, but I think it is important for all of us to be asking the question, where's the new thing? What's the next new thing that I'm going to try spiritually, physically? Because that's what expands. It expands us as individuals. It certainly expands our soul. It expands our vessel. So all that to say that I think new things are exciting. It doesn't mean they always work out. And like we said, when we moved to New York, we were like, we're not making a decision forever. We're making a decision for now. Mm-hmm. But for all of us, I think the thought is, I want to live a life of newness. And that means that I'm going to take chances. That means that I'm going to take steps into things that I have no idea what the consequences necessarily will be, because I want to be expanding all the time.
But to echo that, when we moved to New York, it was really hard for me and one of our kids. Everybody else was like, this is great. Dunkin' Donuts on the corner. This is like everything was so fun. It was really hard for me. And so I questioned the choice to move for a good year to 2 years. And I hated New York, and then I hated New York, and then I kind of was okay with it, and then I kind of liked it, and then I had love-hate, and then now I love it. But in those first years, we kept having this conversation, and I'm like, it's so hard. It's so hard. But I always went back to the why, right? Why did we decide to move here? And the why was always consistent. We believe that we can affect more change in the world by living here, right? For many different reasons. And so, and our backup was, if it doesn't work, we always can go back to what we know. We can always go back to the life we had. So there's always that option. And I think that the unknown, again, for your friend, it's scary. It's scary to put yourself out there to try. We get comfortable. We like our routine. We know our doctor. We know our dentist, where we get our nails done. Whatever it is, where we get our coffee, it's scary. But if you have a desire, like a little pull to try something else, try it. You can always go back to what you know. So that's the first part. And one of my favorite quotes is from Nietzsche. He said, if you understand the why, you can always bear the how. So know your why. Why is it that you are moving? Why is it that you are desiring the things you're desiring? If you really fully understand that, and you stand behind that, you can bear any how. And that goes to different extremes, right? Like Viktor Frankl in the camps, again, the why was, I have a why to live, whether I have a child that's waiting for me or a wife or a book I want to write. The why made the how, what they had to endure, okay. So I think it's a really important consciousness to have. If you understand your why, you can always bear the how.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Should we do one more?
Hello, my name is Keegan. I'm from Oregon. I just want to first say thank you so much for the work you guys do, and your podcast has impacted my life tremendously. So
thank you, Keegan. Can I just ask you to speak a little bit louder, so I'm not sure all our friends can hear you in the room?
Yeah, no problem. Is this okay? Cool. Okay, so my question kind of has two parts, but it should be short. The first part is, did you reach a certain level of certainty and surrender where fear literally just didn't come up anymore? And then also, can you give, like, either before that or if fear still comes up for you, can you give like a practical maybe example of what the conversation with the Creator looks like when you feel the fear in the moment?
Such great questions.
Two very good questions. Thank you, Keegan. Is your first time with us in Rosh Hashanah?
Thank you so much for coming up and for sharing with us. It's so nice to meet you.
Yes, thank you. So, do I choose two questions?
You're very excited by this question, so I'll let you go first.
No, okay. So, I'm generally excited. Yes, so the question was, do you ever get to a place where through surrender, you don't experience fear? And the answer is no. Because as we said earlier, fear is actually a both intrinsic and necessary part of development, of our spiritual development. It's meant to get us to a higher and higher levels. Ultimately, when we're ready to leave this world, if we've done our spiritual work and we've transformed in the ways that we're meant to transform, fear goes away. But while we're in this world, which means necessarily that we have more work and transformation to do, fears will just come in different forms. Yes, probably things that for me at a lower level, well, they will no longer cause me fear at this level. But then other things of a higher level will cause fear at this level, only to push me to grow and develop further. And the second question, which I think to me is more interesting and more important, that dialogue. So, and funny, Monica and I have different dialogues, and we talk about this. When something comes into our lives that is, call it a problem, call it a potential fear-inducing situation, the way I do it is this, and I'm not necessarily recommending this. I go to what is the worst possible scenario? And then I become okay with it. And then whatever else happens, I'm fine with it. That's my process, which is like, you know, something happens and you know, we all have these moments in our lives, sometimes large and sometimes smaller. And this happens. I mean, just recently, and I won't share exactly the details, something happened. And I said, okay, what's the worst possible way this goes? I took the time spiritually, internally to get to okay with that and said, okay, now I don't have any fear attached to it because I'm okay if the worst thing happens, I'm okay if less than that or if nothing happens. That's the process and the dialogue that I internally have because, again...
It's very inspiring to see, by the way. So what do you think mine is? Mine's not bad at all.
But I just want to say one more thing and then but it's predicated on an important truth for me. I trust the Creator completely, more than what I think should happen. So the way it always goes for me is that, okay, this would not have been my choice, but if the Creator is telling me this is what's going to happen, that means necessarily this is the best thing for me. So I find my way to be okay with that, right? But it's predicated on the understanding that the Creator knows much better than me what is actually best for me. And I... my life process is to embrace and surrender to what is best for me, because if the Creator is bringing it into my life, it must be the best for me.
Yeah. My process is a little different. Mine still has me in it. It has the Creator too, but it takes me... It's really, really inspiring, I have to say. It's really, really one of the most inspiring things that I get to experience in being married to you, really, is that. Your level of blender of your certainty to allowing that. Because I think for most of us, we get there, but we still have a little me in it. Like, yes, I understand it's from the Creator and I want this, but like, I really don't want this to happen. Like, okay, I can see the worst case scenario, but I would really don't want this to happen. I'm still kind of there. But yeah, super inspiring. The other thing is when you have fear, it's important to face your fear head on. And it's a story I have in my book, but you know, what happens is if you don't get to that place of this fear is here and it's not me, it doesn't define me, then you start to carry your fears around like heavy luggage and baggage, and it becomes really who you are. You become a fear-based person, where like our friend Yehuda, he didn't fly for 13 years because the fear became so overwhelming. So when fear comes up, I always meet the fear face on. Whatever I fear the most, I do it. I'm not going to let fear win. So one of the stories in the book is that I really am an adrenaline kind of junkie. I like that. I like to be excited. I like to watch thrillers. I like to go on roller coasters. I like to be like, I like that, right? But after I gave birth to Josh, my adrenal glands were so shot that I hadn't realized that I couldn't actually handle that physically. So we went to an amusement park, and we had three kids at the time, and they were all under age probably 7. And Mikhail doesn't love roller coasters. He doesn't love heights. And I convinced him this can be so much fun for all of us. Fun for the whole family. So we get on the first roller coaster, and as we're inching up and we're getting higher and higher, I start to panic a little bit. My palms are sweating, my heart's racing. And on this one particular roller coaster, there's like a bear like greeting you right before you like dive down. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is the last thing I'm ever going to see in my life. I'm going to die. And I was so shocked by that thought. And I'm looking at the bear and there's like a platform and you're going really, really slowly before you're going to dive down. And I had the thought, I can just jump off the roller coaster because we weren't really strapped in so securely. And I'll just stand next to the bear. And I was like, oh my God, you sound crazy. And the thought scared me more than the roller coaster. I stayed on the ride. I didn't want to end up on the news that evening. And I rode the roller coaster. I hated it. Did not enjoy that. But you know what I did the rest of that day? I rode every single roller coaster in the park because I did not want to now be afraid of roller coasters and be afraid of that kind of adrenaline excitement. So that's the thing with fear. And when you find it, you call it out. You own it. You take control and then you move on past it. And the funny thing is, you know, when you walk into an amusement park, you have like, sometimes they're like, let's take your picture. We took our picture and I'm like, I have a hat on and my face is like flushed and my hair's in braids. And we took an after picture. I'm like green and my hair is like frayed. I look like I went through a washing machine, but I conquered it. And now I love roller coasters again. So conquer your fear.
No, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Keegan and Momo for asking the questions and Heidi as well. And we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.